And welcome back. Is it too early to put the recent events of Ferguson in a meaningful historical context? A group of national historians does not think so. The Organization of American Historians is holding its annual conference in St. Louis this week, and Ferguson is very much on the agenda. Two panels during the conference will take a close look. One is titled, American History from the Inside Out, Putting St. Louis's History of Cities, Suburbs, and Race Relations to Work to Reconfigure the National Narrative. It will be led by Washington University history professor Peter Castor. He's with me in studio. The other panel is Historicizing Ferguson, Police Violence, and the Genesis of a National Movement. It will be led by Rutgers University history professor Donna Murch, who will be joining us by phone shortly. Also in studio is Patty Limerick, president of the Organization of American Historians. She is a history professor at the University of Colorado in Boulder. Thank you both of you for being with me in studio. We look forward to hearing from Donna in just a couple of minutes.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks very much.
Patty, let me begin with you, and Peter, you can certainly weigh in on this as well, but is it too early to be trying to put Ferguson into historical context?
We may not be the most clear-headed profession as to when we kick in, and yet we are, I think to a person, we are people who believe that historical perspective is an essential form of sometimes wisdom, but at least deeper thought and not just quick, immediate reaction. So I think we felt honor-bound to do what we could. Will this stand for the ages? No, but then nothing really stands for the ages. But I think we felt it was very important to be humble and to involve local people to the best of our ability and not, okay, we're from outside, we'll tell you about your home area, which people here know so much better. But I thought we have done the right thing in saying, let's have an occasion to reflect. I think for our members, it's very important for them. Many of them want to know more about this place they're visiting, and they have read about it in the newspaper, and to actually be physically here with people who live here, I think that's very important to us.
Peter, it's only been about 8 months, however, since Michael Brown was shot last August. That's not much time to evaluate, or is it? Is it sufficient time to really get a good start?
Well, I would answer your question in a slightly different way, which is this is exactly the moment to think not so much what this means historically, but rather how a historical perspective helps us understand why this happens, what it means, what it might be a product of, because in the immediate aftermath of Michael Brown's death, a lot of people, quite understandably, thought in contemporary terms. What's going on in other parts of the country? What's going on in New York? Or most recently, what's going on in South Carolina? You know, our approach is a little different, which is to think, rather than thinking about everywhere else in the country, rather, how can we look at the history of this region to understand what's happened now? And I think it makes a lot more sense when you think historically.
There certainly has been plenty else to look at in other parts of the country since the Michael Brown shooting in the last couple of weeks, very much a case in point. How does that work into your whole narrative, Patty?
The great project for historians is to be specialized and to think big. And that can almost hurt your head at points when you're trying to know something in depth locally, but also think about how it fits and matches other places. I'm a Western American historian. I'm very aware of the tragic stories of racial violence in the history of this nation. And that doesn't mean in any way we should be complacent about it in our own time, but there is a broader perspective. I myself, I'm speaking purely for myself as a person, but also as an historian, I feel that some of the forces for brutality in Western American history, sometimes the United States Army and its Indian battles and Indian wars, you can stand at a distance from that and condemn it wholeheartedly. But if you read about the actual soldiers in the 19th century Army in the West, many of them poor immigrants, some of them African-American, former slaves trying to find jobs. It's just not simple to stay in a clear perspective on that. You have to recognize the human reality of the people who seem to be uniformly the perpetrators of violence, but it gets more complicated when you see who these people really are. So as a young person, I went to college in 1968. I was going to live in a clear world. I was going to know good guys and bad guys and separate them. But now, many years of studying Western American history, I find it more complicated. And in my personal experience, it seems as if we really need to pay attention to all sides on this, and that can be very uncomfortable and very, very painful.
Peter, one of the interesting things about the local perspective is the fact that St. Louis, during the period of the Civil Rights Movement, was a relatively benign place. There were no riots. I think the Jefferson Bank demonstration was probably one of the biggest events that happened here. So how do you see that weighing it against what's happened most recently?
Well, that's a terrific question because even though I understand what you're saying, this was also a place that had deeply ingrained forms of segregation. And indeed, for the panel that I'm part of, that was our starting point, which is that when a lot of people think about American cities, when they think about issues of race, a lot of that is something they think about sort of in the way that many people learn American history in the classroom, which is something that starts on the East Coast, starts in cities like New York or Boston or Philadelphia or Charleston, South Carolina, and that when you tell the story from a place like St. Louis, it's a different story. We are a city like other cities in the United States, but the reason to call the panel History from the Inside Out was to start from the inside of the country and tell a different story from there rather than starting on the coasts and have everything move inward from there. So you know, that's the way I would frame it, which is that to many historians, what happened in Ferguson made perfect sense because it built on a particular local history, not just of the St. Louis region in general, but of places like Ferguson in particular. And I think it was not nearly so surprising to many historians as it was to other people.
I understand that Donna Murch has joined us now. Donna, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi. Well, say hi to Patty and Peter. We've been talking for about 10 minutes. I don't know how much of it you've heard. But again, thank you for being with us. Let me ask you the question that I put to them as we started this segment, and that is putting Ferguson into context. Some people might think it's too early to do that. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it depends also how you understand context. It's too early to look at Ferguson in hindsight, but it's not too early to place it within the history that leads up to its development. So I think that I agree with Peter's remarks about thinking about different regions of the United States. They have different histories and different trajectories. I have both kind of a personal and an academic relationship to St. Louis and North St. Louis and St. Louis County because that's where my parents met and my mother's family has lived in St. Louis for two generations. And I think that what we see in Ferguson is a combination of looking at the local history of Midwestern cities, of St. Louis, of Detroit, of cities that have undergone deindustrialization and job loss and really have, I think, had quite a hard time post-war years, but also combined with a national movement and a national response to a transformation in policing and mass incarceration. So I think that, to me, Ferguson sits at the crossroads between its own local and regional history and the national history of really a vast expansion in policing powers and in mass incarceration starting in the late 70s.
Patty, you're nodding very affirmatively.
I'm nodding. I'm the president of this association, and people might say, why do historians need to get together and couldn't they just read each other's stuff? I am able to nod at what Donna is saying because through an academic collaboration, I met her and I learned from her, and my attentiveness to the things that she's mentioned on mass incarceration and the patterns of all those things, I wasn't paying close attention to that. Through meeting this historian, my life got some zones of misery that I'm now much more aware of things than I had been in that zone. But my goodness, the exchange among historians, again, I hope the folks from St. Louis want to come join us because it is such a process of dynamic deepening of your perspective. So it is not a good situation, and all kinds of people in many different positions are noticing that. But I do think Donna's work, this is her, she should say a little bit about her past research in this area, but she certainly changed my life by bringing my attention to this. And the program she's presenting here, I think, will do that for many, many others.
Donna, given your St. Louis connection here, were you surprised at what happened here and what evolved following that shooting?
You know, I have to be very honest about this. That's why I mentioned both the personal and the academic. I was surprised. I was surprised in the sense that I've thought of St. Louis in some ways as having a relatively conservative black community. And it is, as was mentioned, it doesn't have a strong history of political organizing, of urban rebellions, black power, and the kinds of black radicalism that we see in other cities. My first book is a history of the Black Panther Party, and it's about trying to explain why the Panthers formed in Oakland, California, and why they became viable. But before I was researching the Oakland and the Black Panther Party, I was actually researching Black St. Louis. And one pattern that I saw was that it really didn't have the same kind of radical formation in the 1960s as some other cities did. And so for me, I actually was quite surprised. I'm not surprised that there is fight back against policing and mass incarceration, which is what I see it being the core of Ferguson is, but I was surprised about where it took place. I think that, you know, once one of these events occurs, you go back and you contextualize it and you look for the reasons. But if you had asked me in 1995, do you think that there will be a major organizing effort centered in black youth with multiracial coalitions against the militarization of police? Do you think that will take place in St. Louis County? I wouldn't have thought that was, I would never have predicted it. So I think I am a bit surprised.
Peter, were you surprised?
I actually share, I was surprised not only, I want to say I agree, I was surprised not only by the amount of mobilization that came in the wake of what happened in Ferguson, but also the degree to which this became a national issue. And those two events were really striking to me. As I said earlier, the notion that there would – the particular challenges within Ferguson might not have come as a surprise to many historians who had studied the area. But I agree with Donna completely. I really did not think this was going to catch fire in the same way that it did. And that people also would begin to start seeing these connections between what was happening here in the St. Louis area, what was happening in other parts of the country, and that there would be this kind of cohesive response. And I actually think that's why historians are so interested in this, because even though, as all of us are saying, as historians, we look to the past and this is – we study the past and this is a contemporary development. But at the same time, I would imagine a lot of historians are seeing this as a historic moment, which means that – say 20 years from now, historians often like to allow at least 20 years before they study something. 20 years from now, historians will be writing about this place and this time and saying this was a historic moment. No matter what comes from this, the sense was this was an important and revealing historic moment.
Patty, one of the reasons it seems to me that this has caught fire, and certainly the incident itself and what followed speaks for itself, but is the fact there were a number of things that happened almost concurrently with that.
Yes.
When you have the Eric Garner case in New York, the young 12-year-old who was shot in Cleveland. Most recently, we have the North Charleston situation. And there have been others. It seems to me that the match may have been lighted in Ferguson, but there was plenty to burn as a result of what happened. Do you see it that way?
Well, yes, and that gives me a chance to do my response to the surprise question, because yeah. I am conspicuously older than the other two people you're interviewing.
We will not hold that against you.
I hope. Well, yeah. I hold it against myself sometimes. But I did start college in 1968, and I did have expectations. I did think I was living in a world that had started a process of change, that by the time I was the age I am now, yeah. it would be tremendously different than so many things that were sources of sorrow and misery and injustice, and those would be taken care of. It would be resolved. People would have come to their senses and remedied those things. So I suppose I needed a wake-up call, and I suppose everyone else needed a wake-up call, because what I think we did as a society was repress, get too optimistic about how much had changed, way too optimistic, and then delegate the management of this unsettled society to people in jobs like police officers' jobs. So rather than society saying, oh, heavens, we didn't get there. We thought we were headed in a direction, but then we didn't complete that journey. Attention dropped, and then these folks with complicated jobs got the responsibility for something that we just thought, I certainly never thought, oh, it's gone away, it's been taken care of. But for me, it's a great reminder that historians are not much good at predicting the future. And whenever we get to doing it, you should cut our mics. Just cut our mics if we say what's going to happen in the future, because that's not our gift. But it was everything that you say about how broadly this pattern was happening across the country. That was just one big statement about unsettled situation, better deal with it.
Donna, do you see it the same way?
I see it in similar ways. I think that, to me, what's really beautiful and powerful about Ferguson is that, so my family is from St. Louis, and I grew up in western Pennsylvania, but since then I've always lived in large cities on either coast. And it's exciting to me that a low-income county, municipality, 10 minutes from North St. Louis, that the young people and the coalition of activists that came together. First, you have a whole new generation of activists that have been formed in roughly 6.5 months. So I think we're roughly on protest day 250, I think, maybe.
Sounds right.
It's Wednesday, I think it's 250. I think it's 252nd on Friday. So there's a whole generation of young people that have been turned into activists in a very short period of time. And I myself have gotten to know St. Louis and St. Louis County differently because of the Ferguson protest, because all of us are limited by our age. I don't spend a lot of time with 20-year-olds normally when I come home to visit my family in St. Louis. And I've gotten to meet really the next generation and the generations coming in St. Louis. And I see so much vibrancy and creativity. And, you know, they use technology. The reason we know about Ferguson is the ways that they use Twitter, Instagram, and Vine. There was a sign that I saw in the early days of Ferguson protests that said, "The revolution will be televined." So in this city, which is not an elite city, is not one of the central, it's not New York or Los Angeles, you have young people that are using technology and are creative in the ways that they conducted protest and created their own social media. And you literally see, I came back to Ferguson to visit 3 times last year in August, in September, and then in October. And I saw people from that I knew from New York and Los Angeles that were literally coming to Ferguson to learn from the young people here. So this is a very interesting story where people are coming to St. Louis and St. Louis County to learn about how to better organize against police violence in their own cities. And I think that's a wonderful inversion of the way that things usually work or are thought of.
Do you get the sense, I'll ask you and then I'll go around the table, that this time is different? I ask this question every time the subject of Ferguson comes up, because this has been sustained and I think in a sense helped by what's been happening in other parts of the country. But we've been down this road before in which, we talk about it and have conversations, and then it sort of gets forgotten until the next incident starts the conversation over again. Do you think, Donna, that this is different?
You know, again, it's hard to say for the reasons that Patty mentioned about historians. We look so much to the past rather than the future. But to me, it feels different for anything that I've experienced. I think of myself of being of the generation of actually Reagan youth, in the sense that I came of age under Ronald Reagan when mass incarceration and the war on drugs were taking off. And this is the most sustained protest I've seen against police violence and more broadly how that's linked to a system of mass incarceration. This is the most sustained effort I've seen in my lifetime. So I think that we're going to see more organizing. I don't think this is the end point. I think this is the the beginning point, but maybe, a third of the way in. This is a movement that's growing inside the United States. It's really questioning not only our policing practices, but this whole these multiple systems of punishment that have been established, and most importantly, using crime prosecution, using punishment and prosecution as a way to deal with social ills. And increasingly, Americans from across the political spectrum feel that this is wrong. It's incredibly expensive, and most importantly, the human cost is terrible.
Peter, I know historians don't like to look ahead so much, but but what do you think? Is this different?
Yeah, I was shaking my head when he asked that question. No, we don't like to look ahead. But I'll admit I'm not going to completely answer the question that you asked. I'll be blunt about that. But what I will say is rather than predict what will happen, what I would suggest thinking about is we tend to think about change in two ways, massive revolutionary change and incremental change. And historically, there are very few moments of enormous significant change. There are lots of moments of incremental change. And what I will simply say that I will be interested to see not so much how this plays out nationally, but how this plays out in Ferguson. I mean, this was the center point to where this happened, and it was not simply the tragic death of Michael Brown, but also the way from that people started asking some big questions about that municipality. And so I'm not going to predict what will happen. What I'm simply going to suggest is that if listeners want to think of themselves as historians, the crucial thing they'll want to ask themselves is, you know, are they seeing examples of substantive change, whether large scale and immediate or incremental over time? And that's really where the jury's out, you know. And so I know that doesn't fully answer the question you've asked, but that's the way I'm thinking about it, which is, you know, a certain kind of wait and see attitude rather than predicting, but encouraging people to look for not just big, enormous change, but also incremental changes, which can actually be very important over time.
Patty, go ahead.
Yes. Well, I was going to say that for all of ours, we can't do much to see the future. Peter and I were planning a session on St. Louis race relations before early August. So that was something, not to give us too much credit, but we did know how important, and so it's not that this just, oh, for heaven's sake, it's important. Sure. We thought about that. Second, historians are pretty good at the subject of unforeseen consequences, people's actions that generate situations that in fact have bad dimensions to them, sometimes good dimensions. And I think we can be useful in that line of reflection. And third, we're pretty good on choice and the fact that human beings make decisions, take in information, and respond to them in ways of consequence, so that we are pretty good at testifying that people should indeed watch to see what happens in change, but they can participate in the change, and that human will is not just run over by social forces and trends, but that still matters.
We only have a minute and a half left. Very quick, and I'll put this to each of you, starting with you, Patty. Do we rush, do you think, rush too much to try to understand events?
Yes, we do rush too much, except historians are not licensed to rush. Historians take in information, and they take in evidence, and they reflect on it, and we always miss our deadlines for our writing projects, and so we are the model to society on how to not leap to judgment, but to be very intense and very attentive in taking in information.
Peter, they're still trying to figure out all the details of the Lincoln assassination.
Exactly.
On this, the 150th anniversary of that event.
Well, and as historians, we have the luxury of time, but that really is the one of the things historians often say, which is that events only come into focus over time.
And, well, Donna, we'll put that question to you finally. We have about 30 seconds.
I guess I have a slightly different take. I would like to see historians more involved in discussions of policy and contemporary events, not to provide hindsight, but to really try to talk about how the history that precedes them. Because there are many things that we talk about in history regularly, like policing for profit or the political economy of race and segregation, that unfortunately doesn't make it into the mainstream. And I would like to see more of the historical research that's been done in the university make it into national public debates.
I think one thing we can say with regard to all of this is that policing in this country is likely to change as a result of what's gone on. I know you're going to be talking about that, Donna, during the conference later this week.
We will. Yeah. We will. And we'll be having a discussion with it along with three protesters who have been active in Ferguson.
It's going to be a great conference. Thank you so much for being with us. Donna Murch, thank you for being with us from Rutgers University. Peter Kaster, thank you from Washington University. Great to see you again. And Patty Limerick, president of the Organization of American Historians. Nice to meet you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Our pleasure.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, in honor of National Poetry Month, we'll take a look at the life and work of Maya Angelou. We'll also get an update on the lives of owls living in Forest Park. Authorized versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. This is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.